I'd like to share my testimony. In many ways, when I share my testimony, I don't feel like I have a very glamorous testimony. But I do believe that what I have to share, that perhaps if there's one soul out there that can find their way because of my testimony, then I'm very willing to share it. But God has done many wonders in my life. Over the years, I've had lots of fears. And I want to say this very carefully. Growing up, I was, I guess you could say, in a very stressful environment. And a very insecure environment. And I say that carefully because I love my mom and dad very much, and we have all grown and we're all where we are now, but that was back then, and that's really what it's all about. I am today a lot of what I went through, lessons I've learned, and also many things that my mom and dad have taught me. I'm also a better person because of that, and I appreciate their input in my life. So anything that I say today, I don't want it to be in any way to put them down, because I love them so much. Many times growing up, I seemed to be the mediator in the home. Took upon myself many responsibilities and a lot of false guilt, or just trying to make sure everybody was okay. If there was a squabble, I was always in the middle of it, trying to make some kind of reconciliation, which led to a lot of insecurity, because we're not really meant to do that. We're not troubleshooters. But because of some of these things of insecurity and fear, I think I tried to build a security around me. And that was a false security, but I tried in many ways to build something secure that felt secure. And the very first thing that I can remember that I did that was really odd was I would see the horse and buggies going down the road, and I would see their blinkers. And then if I had a bad thought, I would, you know, think, oh, I had to look at those reflectors again and wish them God's blessing, God bless you, God bless you, and then don't look again. And if I looked at the reflectors again, I had to do the whole thing over again. That was probably my first thing that I would have done that was really kind of obsessive that I can remember. My sister had gone through a lot of struggles and some OCD, and I was always seemed to be very strong for her at that time, not realizing that I would go through some of the very same struggles sometime later. But I was very strong for her at that time, and I'm not sure how or why. But anyway, before that time, when I was around 13, I'd just like to share how I came to Christ. When I was in school, I did a lot of cheating, and actually, Ben Byler was my teacher, and I was not living right. I was very foolish at school. Like I said, I cheated a lot. We actually went to the desk and got some teacher's books and copied down answers long ahead of time, and I really reaped for that because I'm still not good in my grammar. But anyway, it all came to a head one night when we were writing really filthy notes in school, and I just remember the horrible feeling of that we got found out and we were in trouble, and I just went to the corner of the house, and I just knew I was so wicked, but I didn't know to call myself a sinner. I mean, I just knew that my heart wasn't right. Something was just wrong in here. I didn't know. I just knew it was all my sin, and I'm just not living the way I should. And it was like I was in a Y in the road where I just remember it was like a voice said to me, what do you want to do? Do you want to do what is right, or do you want to keep going this way? And my heart was just like, I want to do what is right. And I didn't have much teaching at that point. I didn't know, even if somebody would say, well, did you know the plan of salvation? I would say, what plan are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, I didn't know those technical little words. But all I know is that I was changed in my heart that night. It was just a simple little thing that happened, but I know that the spirit that is within me today, that same voice entered me that night, that presence. And I believe from what Mel and I shared already that it seems like I became accountable and at the same time I committed my life to Christ. And I'm very thankful that as I started going with the young people, then I had this conviction in my heart and often longed for that we could do things that would be wholesome. And, you know, sometimes it felt so empty. And we longed for fellowship and wholesome activities and other youth that we could talk to. And but anyway, that evening when I made that commitment to the Lord, I don't even remember that I even said the sinner's prayer. It was just something that happened in here. And after that, I had gone to my parents. I think it was maybe the day after, a couple days. And I just confessed to them that I was looking at some really filthy books and on the sly. And I confessed everything at that time that I think that I knew of to them and cleared my heart with them. So then my life really changed from that time. Like I said, I didn't have a lot of teaching. We went to the Amish church, and we weren't really taught, you know, the plan of salvation very clearly. But we did go to Bill Gothard's seminar. We started attending there, I think, maybe several years or several different weeks or something like that. And we got some real insight, and things that we learned were really good. And then we weren't really allowed to go there anymore, because, you know, they didn't want us to go to the seminar. I joined the Amish church when I was 17. I was very serious about respect and obedience. And when I was baptized, I don't remember a whole lot of the day, but I do remember wondering if the other people that are in this long row of youth really know what they're doing. And I'm not so sure that I exactly knew everything I was doing. I didn't really understand everything about baptism and what it all means the way I do today. It was soon after that. I was about 19. I had been dating for about 8 months, and I quit my boyfriend. That was 1982. That was a big year for us. 1982, that was around the time that Levi Glicks and Tate Moos, and that'd be my Uncle Moos, had left the Amish. That was in around March or April of 82, and they were often a real blessing to us. My mom always said, we don't talk over those people, and we knew that Uncle Moos had been a faithful one to come into our home and talk to us when we were struggling, and he was always there to fix anything, and also spiritually he was always there. And so in 1982, I think around May or April, my sister started visiting other churches, which was, well, she got in trouble for it. And so that started a whole different road. I never dreamed that I would ever leave the Amish church. I was just Amish. I didn't know anything better, or I mean, I didn't know anything different, I should say. So when she started visiting other churches, she got in trouble with the church, and this one Sunday, everyone was going to go to church, including me, and we knew that my sister was going to be before the council that day, but she didn't go, but we knew she was going to be brought up. So at that meeting, I had no idea what I was going to say that day, and it was just the Lord. He gave me the words. He gave me the peace. I don't even know how I got through it, but I remember going to church that morning in horse and buggy with my mom and dad, and we were just bewildered. We didn't know what was going to happen. And so they were counseling that if she wouldn't come in 2 weeks, that there would be an automatic, she's excommunicated. And this is what I had to answer yes to if I wanted to stand in good standing. So I knew that they were going to ask me, and about three persons before, I still didn't know what I was going to say until the deacon stood in front of me, and then I said, well, I'm sorry, but I just can't agree with that. That's all I knew to say. I just said what came to my heart. And so in a matter of minutes, they had me sitting up at what we would say the front bench, and then they asked me, you know, for what reason I give that I would not be agreed with this. And again, I just was like, Lord, I don't know what to say. And so these words came to me. I just said, well, I just don't feel like it's right to put somebody out of the church that wants to live for Jesus. And I was 19 at the time. My sister was 17. And we were very young, but God saw us through that time. It was a very difficult time. So it ended up in about an hour's time that I was actually excommunicated, but my sister was still in the church. And I went home, and she had been visiting another church that day, and she was at home already. And I told her that I am not in the church anymore. And she was so shocked. But that was the beginning of a lot of changes, a lot of just trying to find our way. You know, we stumbled and bumbled. I remember right over that time talking about how people sometimes, just the right people are there for you when you're really going through a trial. I remember soon after that, because of all the upheaval, our relatives started coming, and just we didn't know what to do. We were just like, what do we do? You know, we just don't know how to fix it. And there was this one morning, I think it was soon after the excommunication, my dad couldn't handle it very well, and he went to Phil Haven just for the day. But, you know, that was the trauma in itself. And we closed the store, which was uncalled for. And I just remember that day somebody came to our house, and they didn't talk very nice to my sister and I, and it just left us feeling terrible. And I happened to look out the window, and here was Levi Glick's wife walking along the road. She had just recently, they had been put out. And I just called out to her. I said, could you please come and pray with us? And she did. And that was an angel for us at that time, just a ministering angel, I felt like. And like I said, we were young and just kind of trying to find our way through culture shock, because then we start going to another church. And everything was just kind of strange. We didn't know how to act, and yet it was not so different, but it was very different. And anyway, I was always very conscientious, and all this turmoil and insecurity brought on a whole new bang of oversensitivity in a very unhealthy way. Actually, Mel and I went to church together at that church for 5 years. It was over the time when they kind of got a little stricter with some of the young people, and I took everything they said to the iota, and I just tried to live everything by the law, and I couldn't. but it led into a lot of more fears. I was always thinking that I either stole or lied. And it just kept me immobile. It kept me from being who God created me to be. Something was always taking my joy. I was like two persons. On the one, I would be this bubbly, smiling, happy, joyful person. And on the other side, I was this meticulous, keep it under the hat kind of person. And don't let anybody know you're crazy. I taught school, not very long, but I taught school. And I was two Barbies. I taught school, and there, with all my insecurities and things, working for my mom and dad was a little bit more of a safe haven, because I could kind of get away with my odd ways, like my time card at work or whatever. You know, I knew my brother-in-law or whoever would always excuse me. But then I guess I should back up. I started volunteering at a hospital. And I was fine. I would get a free meal for 4 hours of work. And I didn't know that when I really first started. I just went for the meal until horrors. I found out that you have to work 4 hours to get the meal. And then I really started calculating every minute and every hour. And if I talked to an Amish lady or somebody in the hallway at the hospital, at the end of the day, I would calculate the minutes. And, I guess I have to take off so many minutes, and then I couldn't go to lunch and act free with the other volunteers. They'd be like, why aren't you going to lunch? Oh, I think I won't eat today. But, you know, the fact was I was not having enough of minutes, and I'm sure the hospital cared less about that. But I would go home, and I would calculate my minutes, and then I'd be sitting on the bed, and then I'd write down what I need. Sometimes I'd have papers, and then I'd put a stroke down that I owed the hospital an hour, and then I'd think, well, now, did I put that stroke down just now, or... Well, I'll add another one just to make sure. So I was always in debt. And that's how I operated. When I went to teach school, now I was being paid. Now the double burden was to be very honest. You know, I got to make sure I'm worth my paycheck. And so when I was correcting the schoolwork, I would be so meticulous. And I had everything marked in mine, dishes or whatever. I didn't want to steal anybody's items. I didn't want to be guilty of anybody's stolen property. And when I used, one day, I remember I was correcting schoolwork, Johnny's paper, and I wrote a personal note about something I wanted to bring the next time because it was a little ways from here. Next week, I want to bring this. And oops, I used the school pen by mistake. So I'd reach in the drawer and get my personal pen, which was marked, and write my note. And then, oh, yeah, my little paper down in under, of course, where nobody would see, pull that out and write down a little stroke with my personal pen that I owe the school one blue pen. That's bondage. And I did those kind of things. They had told me when I was teaching there to make sure I shut the stove off or, you know, turn the knob to off and close the doors. Well, I did. And very, very well. I remember one time I thought I was going crazy. I really did. It was like there was a stove here and I would have to turn it off. Then there was another door over here that when I went out the main door, it had like a vacuum effect. So I would close off the stove, close that door, and go out here. And then I thought, did I shut that stove off? I mean, did I turn that knob to off? I know I did. You better go check. What if the barn burns down? Okay, then I went back in and checked, and then the opening of that door opened that door, so I had to go through the whole thing again. So I did it the second time, went back out and closed the door, and a voice said, did you close or shut the stove down? I know I did. But I went in the third time, and the last time I went in, I spelled O-F-F. It's off. Don't look at it again. And I went out of the room. And I would shut the door, then I'd make sure it was shut and make sure it was shut. And when I left teaching there, I probably should have paid them for their knobs because they were loose. I mean, that is for real. They were loose. Now, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul. But that was the deep bondage I was in, and I felt so frustrated sometimes, but it was like I was proud because I didn't really tell anybody, not too many people. And I remember the closest I came to nervous breakdown was when I was correcting or doing the report cards. I didn't want to flunk anybody, you know, I'd be so meticulous, but I just had to somehow stop this frenzy, but it was just going on. It was like I was driven. And I knew I was in bondage. I was a youth treasurer, and I would count the money, and I'd count it again, and then make sure I counted it right, and then, you know, maybe add a quarter of my own, or just on and on, things like that. My brother, I'd often, you know, just, like, maybe say something like, come on, let's go, let's help me with this table or something, you know, let's go. And then I think, oh, you just spoke evil to your brother. And I'd go to him, and I'd say, could you please forgive me for, you know. And sometimes it got to the point where he'd see me coming with that look. He'd be just like, don't worry about it. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It made me feel awful. But it made me kind of feel good that he said, don't worry about it. I went to a yard sale. This was one of the times that I started thinking, this is really crazy, and I better stop or I won't come out of this. I went to a yard sale, and you know how when the dew is on the ground, you get grass on your shoes. And I remember going about 3 miles away, thinking that I looked at my soles of my shoes and there was somebody else's grass sticking on my shoes. And I thought about this when I got home. I just contemplated, should I take the grass back or shouldn't I? I thought, you know, that is really crazy. I don't think I'm going to. Somehow I got through that. One day I dropped my watch on the ground at a parking lot, which I would often, if I dropped something, I'd just rather leave it there than pick it up because it might have been there before, you know. But this time, I remember, I just thought, you know what, I better start coming against this thing. And I just went and I picked up that watch. I didn't see it drop from my pocket to the ground, but I knew it was mine. It looked like mine, and I heard something drop, so obviously it must have been mine. So I just picked it up and just went against the grain. Anyway, Mel married me in that mess. Soon after that, he married me, and he helped me so much. Of course, on the outside, you know, other people didn't really know that I was going through this kind of thing. So, I mean, Mel Esch married her, you know. But no, I mean, the other Barbie was wanting spiritual life and, you know, I mean, I was enjoying Jesus and the Lord. I was enjoying for the most part, but every once in a while that chain would just jerk so hard it would just throw me right off my feet and just make me so immobile. Fear just overwhelmed me. I remember one thing that Mel shared with me, and I'm hoping this is helping somebody because, I'm sorry, it sounds pretty, I know it's weird, but if it can help somebody, then I'll be blessed. But this is how Mel married me. And often, because my mind was so, with confession, so mixed up and so, like, just going after these little things, like, with, you know, all I had, he was actually almost like God to me for a while until I could trust my own thinking. I would just say, Mel, what should I do? He'd say, Barb, no. You're not going back to that person. And when I was Amish, I had saved up from all the places where we went to suppers and things. I had saved up all these little, maybe a pretzel here and a little styrofoam cup here, just in remembrance of, and I wrote the date and all these things on there. The horror that came upon me one day when I thought, these are all stolen goods. Now I would just have the grace and the faith just to say, burn them. But what I did, and that was before we were married, I went, pulled into this farm lane, dropped off a stone there, pulled into that parking lot, dropped off this, all over the place, to try to make some kind of restitution. It was torment, and I was in bondage. One thing that I used to not do very much was take a Kleenex at somebody's house because I didn't want to steal. Well, this really helped me. One day Mel told me that if you need a Kleenex, the next time you need one, you take 10. Not just one, you take 10 of them. I thought, 10 stolen Kleenexes? When I only need one, he said, take 10. And I never really did that, but I know that that mentality really helped me. So I had years of condemnation, accusation, of course, lack of assurance off and on, especially whenever there was something that kind of unsettled my sky or something on the back burner. But I think I've come a long way. But I will say that God has so increased my faith and has healed me in some of that real distorted thinking. And I just want to say this as a praise to the Lord, that I can do, like, if I see a Bible at church and I need a pen and there's a pen sticking out of their Bible, it doesn't faze me in the least. Grab it, write my note, stick it back in. I don't even look around to see if they were watching or nothing. You know, that's just a little thing, but to me, that's faith. And so even if you have to take small steps of faith, God honors that faith. And I think that some of the things that God has used in having me, or that I chose that route, I should say, go through those things, is that it has given me a real heart for hurting people. And so even if somebody's listening on the phone or anyone in this crowd, you know, if there's something that you can identify with that you struggle with in this area, I would encourage you to be real fast, because it can take you way down. And I really did think sometimes that I was going crazy, but yet somehow I don't know how I made it through, but by the grace of God. One thing I learned is that God does not condemn. The enemy comes with fear, panic, and creepy, incapacitating feelings. That is not of God. And I have learned that Jesus leads his sheep. He doesn't drive them. I've learned that God's voice is gentle, and we can know it. And we also can know when we've done wrong, and that there is a clear voice that comes through. It's not panic, but it's clear. We know what we've done. We can do what we need to do, confess it or whatever, and the Spirit of the Lord is the witness within that is the right way. I still sometimes get tempted in some of these areas, but more and more I'm seeing how the enemy has just tried so hard to take my joy. I needed to repent of all my perfectionism and fear, which I did. Probably my sin was more on trying to be so perfect than what was actually bothering me. I was sinning in trying to be so meticulous. I was really destroying myself, like Mel read in that Ecclesiastics. I've come to see more clearly of things like the power of the blood, assurance, and justification. And I know that God is not finished with me yet. I know one thing, that the enemy doesn't really care so much the tool he uses to make us ineffective or keep us in bondage, just that it works. So if there's anybody listening that has ever gone through these struggles, I would be happy to talk with you or show you a better way than what I've come. And I think the way I've come is that I hid it way too long, and it doesn't get any better. It only gets worse. So God bless you. I'm sorry that I kept so long.
God bless you for listening to the preaching of His Word. You may leave us a message by pressing 99. To hear information about our Saturday morning Bible study, press 88. To find out how to listen to a church service at Ephrata Christian Fellowship, press 77. To hear the menu for this topic again, please stay on the line. To listen to any other message in this topic, press the appropriate extension number now.